What'll it be?
I was going to fill up with whatever's cheapest.
I'll be happy to take care of that for you.
I thought this was self-serve.
We're completely full service here at Empire State Gas. Sure, it may cost you a bit more, but you're worth it. Now, what else can I get you? Something from the snack shop for you and the little lady?
There is no little lady. I'm alone. And I just ate.
Well, how about a complimentary balloon animal for the kids?
I have no kids, and I'm still alone.
Well, don't feel bad. You may be alone, but you're wise enough to come to the largest independently owned gas station chain in the Northeast United States.
We're in Los Angeles.
I'm sure that you know that our gas is organically grown and good for the environment.
Good for the environment?
That's right. When you burn our fuel, you're actually helping to reverse climate change. That's why we say at Empire State Gas, from farm to pump, we've got great gas.
From a secret location somewhere in America, this is your Chill Pack
Hollywood.
Hollywood Hour. I'm leaving.
Your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour with Dean Haglund and Phil Lairness.
Los Angeles International Airport becomes more and more of a nightmare with each passing day. An hour it has taken me to get here at 6 o'clock in the morning. Well, I left at like 6:20. Anyway, I do enjoy being down here at the arrivals level of LAX because you never know what kind of character you're gonna encounter.
Hey, everybody. Are we on? Is this thing on?
It is on. Hold on a second. I gotta get the car into drive somehow.
Great to be back in Los Angeles, ladies and gentlemen.
Welcome to LAX.
Oh my God. You know why I paid so much money for that global entry to get through customs really quick?
So that you could wait here.
Yeah, I'd sit on my ass on the outside for another hour after a 14-hour flight.
Oh my goodness. So you had a non-stop flight from Australia.
Non-stop. It was 14 hours of pure economy plus legroom.
Here's the exciting thing about getting a text from you that you'd arrived early, 30 minutes early, according to what you sent me before, is that both online and here at the airport, there are warning signs everywhere you look saying all United flights delayed.
Yeah, domestic.
All of them. Except the United flight. Yeah. Except for the one you want.
Exactly. Well, and I said we shouldn't pick me up at Tom Bradley because there was actually three flights from Australia all leaving at 9:50 yesterday, or today, I guess. You know how that's weird. I actually left at 9:50 a.m. and it's now 7 a.m. on the same day.
Don't kid yourself. That's, as I was just explaining to the listeners, that's exactly my drive here to the airport this morning.
14 hours.
It gets longer and longer. It really does. I mean, it used to be that it was 25 minutes door-to-door before, you know, 7 a.m.
What mystery 1960s Los Angeles are you living in?
Oh, you know, that's interesting that you would ask me that because I discovered the old Glendale Airport terminal.
That's a good one.
It still exists, and it's being renovated and refurbished.
Oh, really?
And when I say discovered it, I mean I hopped the construction barricade and went in and took pictures.
Oh my gosh! Look at you.
As you do, because I just accidentally happened upon the street where Disney Animation offices are.
Yeah.
And they're in Glendale, and I realized that that road that those buildings are on is the old runway.
Ah.
And so...
Oh, I did not know that.
Cinephiles know this airport because it's where, you know, Rick and Louie formed the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
That's
at the end of Casablanca.
That's totally right.
And it was the airport.
You're gonna take centuries, so just stay in this lane.
It was the airport for Southern California.
For a long time, for sure.
Until, I guess, the Department of Defense commandeered it in the lead up to World War II.
Right, because that's when all the skunk works and the Lockheed Martin's top secret facility was before they moved to Area 51.
And then, of course, LAX opened.
Right.
And the need
North
for
Grumman
it.
Because was right over here.
Was the need for it was gone. So, good flight, Dean Hagelin?
Wow. Let's see. There's some turbulence. Saw three movies. Caught up on my Silicon Valley episodes.
Oh, well, we're going to talk about that. See, you on a plane, I don't know if you saw this study, but 92% of all people confess to binge-watching television shows.
Oh,
92%. Now, that doesn't mean that all shows they watch, they binge, but it means that 92% of people binge.
Yeah.
And that's defined, as we've talked about before, of as watching a minimum of three episodes in one sitting.
Right.
So of that show.
90 minutes of...
Well, it depends. Well, yeah, for exactly. Silicon Valley, absolutely. You know, for as we've talked about, a network sitcom, well, why not binge watch it? That's an hour.
That's an hour.
But for a drama show, it might be three hours. But anyway, but the point is 92% of people at one point or another consume television entertainment that way.
In a massive way.
The amazing stat, maybe even more amazing to me than that, is that 53% of people do it alone.
Yeah.
They're not with anyone else while they're binge watching.
So they just plop on the couch and go for it.
Or in front of their computer with headphones. But it means that television is becoming, which used to be the great unifier.
Yeah.
Right? You could, water cooler discussion. Everybody. Everyone might not have seen the big hit movie, but everyone saw
around.
The top 10 television shows,
exactly.
Whatever it was. And but now 53% of people are actually watching it alone.
Right.
So it's really becoming almost an isolating activity.
Wow. That's so weird.
So, so I'm glad that you have been catching up on the Silicon Valley.
Yes. So that was good. And then Avengers Age of Ultron.
Oh, we've got so much to discuss about the big blockbusters.
The big blockbuster.
The television.
Yeah.
But you've been busy. No, you tell me everything. You've been busy with conventions down under.
Down under with the conventions. There was the Sydney SupernovaCon and then the Perth SupernovaCon, followed by I'm going to Kineticon tomorrow in Connecticut, Hartford, Connecticut. And then turning around, getting to New Zealand.
You go from Connecticut to New Zealand.
Basically. With a stop, well, I pack my clothes here back in L.A. for 7 hours.
So you do come from Connecticut back to L.A., then to New Zealand.
Yeah, I know. And then from there, do a convention plus a stand-up show, then fly...
In New Zealand.
In New Zealand. Then fly back to Sydney to get down to Melbourne to do a celebrity theater sports... And then get back to Sydney in time to...
Well, now that one seems particularly ridiculous because Sydney to Melbourne is a very long trip, right?
Well, it's 4 hours on the old plane.
On the plane, it's 4 hours. I mean, it's almost like going across country here.
Yeah, maybe not that far.
So one would wonder why you don't go from New Zealand to Melbourne.
Yeah, right.
And when I say one, I mean you.
Right.
You wonder why you're not doing that.
Because I got, like, there's a 2-day gap in that scheduling. Oh, I know why. There's another good reason.
Yes.
I am doing a one-off show in Sydney, Australia. For those listening, I'm at the Camelot Lounge in Merrickville. one night only with me and David Rozowski, Second City, Los Angeles resident, and has owned a podcast on improv comedy, very successful. He's teaching workshops down in Sydney while I'm there.
Wow.
So lo and behold, I said, let's put on a show for one night only. And the very one night we happen to both be in Sydney and free is July 22nd.
It's like you didn't leave.
It's like I didn't leave. I know. Here's the old town, same as it ever was. Fantastic. It looks like it's still standing. There seems to be water. People are watered. The trees are green. What's happened? There's clouds in the sky, even.
Yes, it's June gloom here in July.
Right. I heard May gloom was also May, gray May.
Well, June there's gloom. so many changes, Dean Hagelin, since you left. I don't even know where to begin.
Gender reclassification? Anybody? Is that something you want?
The show. Actually, that's funny. Our show has been gender reclassified because on a couple of weeks, as you know, guest co-hosts Lily Holloman and Karen Foreman have taken over.
Sounded very good to me.
A couple of weeks from now, they will do their final, we hope. Hopefully by then, we will have figured out exactly how to do the Trans-Pacific link.
Yes. Won't that be fun?
Won't it be fun? Yeah. I'm thinking, just to be safe, maybe we carve out some time while you're at Kineticon this weekend.
Oh, right.
To do
practice a little something.
Yeah, or bank one. That practice may end up as a show.
Oh, I get it. At Kineticon.
But anyway, so they've done an outstanding job. It's been a lot of fun. And, of course, they'll be doing it again in a couple weeks for us as we work out the kinks on figuring out how to keep the big momentum going.
Keep it alive.
These last 2 weeks, of course, not a surprise, hugely popular shows.
With the X-Files.
I want to believe. The
review. The summation.
A return to a sense of film literacy.
Fantastic. Well, I've certainly been reading the tweets, and everybody is thrilled beyond pieces. So.
Yeah, not just, I think, X-Files, but also, you know, media... people interested in media, people interested in art, in psychology, in mythology, in symbolism. In short, like we said, people interested in visual literacy.
Think of that.
Because it's a more interesting conversation than... so what do you think?
Yeah, thumbs up, thumbs down.
Let me ask you this.
Oh, please.
Have you... Because you're a patient guy, sort of. Sometimes, in some weird ways, you're very patient.
Yeah, that's right. I hung out there for a long time.
Exactly. Let's just focus on the hour that you were waiting.
Okay.
At the arrival terminal.
Very good.
While you were there, did you get tired of people asking you there at the arrival terminal if you'd be returning to the X-Files?
Yes.
Have you grown tired? I mean, you just did two conventions.
Yeah.
I mean, how many times did you get that question?
Every time, pretty much. And, you know, and it was still...
And you had to say, shut up, Gary Jones. Yeah. Stop asking.
No, I...
Big comedy show you did with Gary Jones.
Yeah, two big comedy shows.
Wow.
Never mind. Yeah.
It's like you never left.
I'm doing comedy shows. I know. I just sort of step into a warm bath down there. Even though it's freezing, by the way, it is their coldest winter right now since 1935 in dear old Sydney.
That's right. I said, of course, that we would catch up on summer blockbusters, and I mean to say your winter blockbusters.
My winter blockbusters, I know. There's, I was flying, who came running through the airport, but Channing Tatum, who was down there promoting his...
The new Magic Mike.
Magic Mike Extra Magic. Large. And, boy, the whole airport was in a tizzy.
But isn't an airport always in a tizzy?
No, there was, like, paparazzi and flash video and girls running up and trying to get a glimpse of him. And then even the customs guys, as we're going through immigration, we're all so laughing amongst themselves at who is going to stamp his passport. I think that's a euphemism. I'm not sure.
That'll be in part three of our film literacy. So, have you grown tired of the question?
I have a little bit in that there's no new information.
Well, again, people asking you what they could Google.
Yeah, right? Like, I sort of get the same information they're getting. However, I guess they're not getting all the information because they often says, are you going to be in the new one? I guess not, since you're dead.
I know.
And
no
then
one.
You go, nobody read the comic book. And then
right.
You're like,
no one has been paying attention, right. Absolutely, to right. the news. I mean, yeah, you interviewed Chris Carter at Comic-Con, for crying out loud.
Exactly.
We played that interview.
Yeah.
The Lone Gunmen Are Alive.
The Chilpack Hollywood live event of the week.
Thank you, Garrett Watling.
Yeah, Garrett, way to go.
You participated.
Yes.
In fact, you moderated.
I moderated.
You were the surprise guest moderator.
Yeah, without any preparation whatsoever.
Of an IDW
panel.
Yes,
IDW, the comic book publishing firm.
About
the 10th season of The X-Files,
right,
which is currently being released on in comic book form by IDW.
Right.
I think by now, the maybe how often do comic books come out? Once a month, or
about once a month? There's some that are bilingual, but it takes about a month.
Two episodes have come out in issue form.
Yeah,
and I thought that this would be great fun. This is hopefully, if I do this correctly, this is you bringing up episode two of. The season 10 of The X-Files in comic book form.
Okay, I don't remember.
To Chris Carter.
Uh-huh.
And asking him about episode 2, especially as it pertains to a certain trio of conspiracy theorizing computer hackers.
Right.
And it's you trying to pin down Chris Carter.
The ever elusive Chris Carter.
In a certain way. And yeah. I think at the end of it, you also hear Jillian pipe in, because Jillian Anderson is on this panel. So hopefully this will work, and if not, we might do that rarity, a little bit of editing.
Technically season 10, is that right?
Well, that's what they're calling it. It's a comic book series, so it's got its own comic book life. And it's got its own mythology, and Joe here, who will speak for himself, has come up with great ideas and great twists and turns on the characters. We're bringing a lot of characters back, as you'll see. I have to say, it's really Joe's taking the lead.
Joe's taking the lead. But is this still part of the official X-Files canon?
Of the canon, you want to say that?
Yes. Spoiler alert, can I screw up the second book?
Second issue came out this week.
And what happens in the second issue is that the gunmen are back in it. So I've been doing sci-fi conventions now, and everybody goes, oh man, so sad that the gunmen died. And I kept saying, yeah, but you didn't see the bodies in the coffin.
You died off screen.
You died off screen, and then you saw these hermetically sealed CDC steel coffins that if you have, like the gunman did, caught a super rare virus, the coffins are supposed to be built to the size of the person so that there's no airspace. And yet at the funeral, every coffin was the same size. Yet of the gunman, one of us is shorter than the other two. So this is what I told everybody. That proved.
And one has a bigger mouth.
Yeah, fires. We'll laugh about that. So now, here. Oh, look at that. We all get our name cards.
Oh, I just arrived.
Yes, you just arrived. Thank you. I had no idea you were sitting there. I didn't know.
I'm not going to ask you.
Okay, good.
That, but I do have a question.
Okay.
Do you have any travel plans to Vancouver in the near future?
No, none whatsoever. I just heard Bruce sent me an email saying casting is having trouble getting a hold of you. So that means they tried to get a hold of me.
I told you this was going to happen.
Well, I don't care. Like, how long have I had DeanHaglin.com? What's that going on?
How long have Russian hackers had DeanHaglin.com?
Yeah, well, that's true, too. Anyway, 20 years now, I've been running that website with a contact me that goes directly, and I answer all my emails. And lo and behold...
Did you ever think to just reach out to 1013 or whoever and just say, hey, wanted to let you know...
No,
here's where I'm... Yeah, you know...
You think I should do that?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
You know, here's the thing. When people move,
yeah,
I get emails saying, hey, I've moved.
Ah, see, that's a good
here's,
one.
Here's my information.
Ah.
I get that, and I don't even want it.
So the people who want it should get that. These are the lessons I should learn when moving.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's, you know what, in fact, when I moved, and you heard me, when I moved, I just moved.
Oh, yeah, what? You left your apartment?
16 years. 16 years.
Sub-offices of Rational Exuberance?
Yeah. It's all packed up. Rational Exuberance, the sub-office of the post-production facility.
Yeah.
I just, in the midst of, you leaving... a key collaborator of mine over the last few years dying,
Wait, that wasn't me.
No, our composer, Greg DeBellis, facing a major, major illness. So many changes around, and I'd actually been tired of living there for a couple of years, but it'd been so busy that, well, it just didn't make sense, you know. Oh, got a movie to edit, gotta wait till that's done, don't want to pull the plug on that in the middle, so, you know, Fuzz is happy here, all so many things to keep one there, but it had been a couple years since my enjoyment, my feeling good there had been one of those reasons.
Right.
And I just said, wow, there's so much change around. This really feels like the space between. Let's embrace that.
Right.
And so I initially immediately looked for other places and then realized, well, that doesn't actually feel good either right now. So well, I'm just throwing everything in storage and I'm going to roam.
Wow.
I'm going to spend the summer roaming and writing. Lily can take care of Fuzz Aldrin.
You're going to be Jack Kerouac.
And so I've started that and been writing. But here was the thing. I had, when I moved in there some 16 years ago, the move out of my previous place, this house that I was renting south of Wilshire.
Gotcha.
It took overnight to pack up and move out. I mean, I got it done overnight.
Right.
From starting to pack up through moving. This was, wow, this was like a 10-day process. My stuff had collected stuff in the 16 years.
Excuse me. I'm changing air currents here. Yeah.
So you go through the process of really looking through everything for the first time in a long time and going, wow, I can fill up dumpsters right
fantastic.
Now.
And so did you?
I did. Oh, yeah. So it was, I mean.
You said it. You molted.
It was like, you know, as we're carrying a couch out to the truck, going, do I really even want this on the truck? Do I want this going into storage? Do I want to have to deal with this on the other end?
Right.
Ah, you know, there's a Goodwill on the way. There goes the couch.
There goes the couch.
There are other couches. The world will make more.
I think they will.
Anyway,
exactly how it works.
So I don't know what brought that up, except that when I did this and I got a post office box, I got a very nice little pamphlet from them about things I might want to do. But top of the list was
tell friends.
Tell Dean Haglund to contact 1013 and give them a change of address.
See, that's a good one.
You like that?
Yeah, I do. So I'll get on that for sure.
All right. Summer winter blockbusters?
Yeah.
You caught up with the Ultron.
I caught up finally with the Ultron.
And,
you know, that, I think it was.
I feel like 14-hour flight and Age of Ultron pretty much sums it up.
You know, it does have a lot in common in that it's so epic that it looks like it's directed in pieces. The whole thing is like, oh, okay, now we got to direct the whole action sequence with Iron Man and the Hulk. And that seemed like a completely different movie than, okay, now here's the thing with Thor and Ultron. Okay, now that's a completely different movie. So there's like all these chunks, lumpy chunks, sort of, what do they call that? Preview teasers.
I thought we'd stop off here, by the way, at the Taco Bell for the lumpy chunks.
Ah, the lumpy chunks. And look, there's the giant donut.
We found it.
Yes, the Kindle's donut. We're at Normandy and Century for those following along.
You know, the further I get from the Ultron movie, and I like calling it the Ultron movie, as if there was going to be an Ultron movie. It was only a matter of time.
Right.
The Ultron movie was utterly devoid of any joy.
Yeah.
Whatsoever.
Whatsoever. There was nothing fun about it.
It didn't get bad reviews, really. No. It got mediocre, lukewarm reviews. And those were really kind, actually, in retrospect.
Right.
Because there really was no joy. There was no sense at all of why the filmmakers wanted to tell this particular story.
Yeah, and it seemed like it was also trying to jam in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and like all of that Marvel complexity.
It was like a math problem.
Exactly. Yeah.
There was no, done by someone who doesn't enjoy math problems.
Exactly. A disgruntled mathematician. directed that thing.
Now,
even though it was Josh.
Well, you've been down under.
Yes.
Have you availed yourself of the local culture by catching the iconic Mad Max in his return, Mad Max Fury Road?
You're going to laugh. There's an amazing theater called the Dendy. Serves alcohol in a lovely, lush seating. They were showing Mad Max, and the night we went to see it, it was already playing the last show, because they have weird times there. They don't start like 8. They don't start every hour in the multiplex like they do here. So,
do you realize you're the last person
ever
that shows up to a theater and just says, well, we don't need to know what the times are?
Yeah.
There will be one?
I know, it's a little arrogant of me, isn't it? Well, but it's also how your scheduling works out and all that sort of thing.
And so that's it.
You have to get in the left lane pretty soon, but not here.
That's the only way to see Mad Max is that one theater.
It wasn't on the plane, but...
wow, your options are very limited.
They are limited. So that's coming. Don't kid yourself. But hey, The Wedding Ringer, I surprisingly giggled at that thing.
That was on the plane. Not a summer blockbuster or winter blockbuster, but a Kevin Hart. You giggled at that.
I giggled at Kevin Hart, the $3 million a year comic, or whatever he's making now.
And
that's about it.
And what else did you watch?
I watched the, what was the fourth one?
I mean, you must have also watched some things on the way there.
I finally caught, that Whiplash.
Oh.
That was good.
Yeah.
As a drummer. And that he was playing the drums. And I did like that final concert where he was supposed to be strung out to dry and how tense that was.
It's not just that he's playing the drums to me. It's that he really became a drummer.
Yes.
And that informs every scene of his performance, not just the musical scenes.
Right.
His whole physicality is naturally affected by being a drummer.
Yeah, exactly.
By the amount of work that he has to put in.
The hands bleeding.
How about his posture? I mean, all of it is affected. And so you see that in the rest of the film as well.
Yeah, even when he's like the barista and he's like giving it up, it seems that then, not to blow the plot for those.
Yeah, you gave away the barista twist. I don't even remember that.
There's a part where he sort of gives it up and then goes back to it. Even that, he was clearly expressing the musicality of it all. So I loved it. So there you go. Those are a ton of movies I saw.
It's we are in the midst of the big summer movie season here.
How's it going?
And it is interesting because if you had moved to Australia, let's say, when we started this show, we wouldn't have continued it. Also, back then, as we talked about, box office was not a year round.
Right.
When we first started this show, you weren't having hit films released in January and February.
Right. You are now.
So it's a worldwide enterprise, but also a year-round enterprise now. However, maybe because of, I think probably twofold, fears over piracy, though I think those tend to be overblown or overblown intentionally.
Well, yes, you say that, however.
Well, I'll want to hear your however, although we did a whole show that kind of proved that films that people want to see aren't the ones that are affected by piracy.
That's right.
But also, I think because of the need to make the marketing dollar go farther, films all tend to get released, big films anyway, very close to their U.S. release date, sometimes before their U.S. release date, in the rest of the world.
Yeah, and think of that. I mean, Magic Mike just opened here, and there he is in Australia promoting the same damn movie. So that guy's got to be on a plane glowing around the globe, for crying out loud. Same with Schwarzenegger. What was his latest? He was just in Australia.
Oh, well, the Terminator Genesis.
Terminator Genesis, and he's like, he's circling. He opened that in Germany, Australia. Like, it all happened, it seemed like, within a week or two of being at every opening around the globe to promote that thing.
Well, as we know from the trailer, there's now two of him anyway.
Right.
There's the younger one and the, so he can cover more ground.
Yeah.
if I were to list for you. Yes. And why don't I?
Why do
I? The three major summer releases that I've seen recently.
Okay.
I can, with fair certainty, know two things. One, that they've come out in Australia.
Right.
Which, again, is sort of amazing because this is, even 10 years ago, this was not how it was.
Right.
And 20 years ago, absolutely not.
Yeah.
So the first thing I would know is that the odds are they've come out in Australia and you haven't seen them. Those are the two things.
Hey, guess how busy it is? Girls coming out of quarantine.
Oh, my goodness. We're still, one thing doesn't change. The girls get thrown under the bus for the reason things haven't gotten
Look,
done.
It's been really, you know.
How is the graphic novel?
See, I've already started two pages of it. That's how busy it's been.
All right. So I'm three pages into the rewrite of my next film, which I've had on my to-do list every day for the month.
So there you
so
go.
We're
it's neck and neck.
Pedal to the metal.
Absolutely.
Just putting your head down and going straight on till morning.
Oh, my gosh. I got a brand new drafting table down there. It's going to be fantastic.
So I saw Tomorrowland.
Yeah, what'd you think?
Well, there's nothing really to think about. It. This thing is a mess from the get-go.
Right.
The get-go. But it's here's one of the things. I don't know if this is a new thing in film or if this is a new thing about where I'm at in my career.
Okay.
But I have recently found myself seeing big movies where I'm so distracted by the extras.
Oh, no.
And then when I focus in on the actors, I'm so distracted by the inconsistency of what they're doing from coverage shot to coverage shot. And sometimes these are great actors. Like, I'm watching Hugh Laurie in the beginning of Tomorrowland, and nothing he's doing seems appropriate or authentic, and from shot to shot, it's not matching.
Wow.
Hugh Laurie's kind of as good as they come.
Yeah, you would think.
Joined the cast of Veep and has been, you know, an amazing addition to it. So, you know, I'm not blaming him. There's something about how these films are put together in pieces and the degree to which actors are left adrift. But with Tomorrowland, okay, a film, you know, based on not only a ride, based on a section of a theme park.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
We struck gold by making
Pirates of the Caribbean.
Struck gold by deciding we'll do the Haunted Mansion again.
Right.
Because the first time it didn't strike gold. meanwhile, you've got the Jurassic World movie.
Right.
Where I'm actually jazzed while watching it about the idea that they could turn parts of the movie into a ride very effectively.
See, we're back to product...
locomotive.
Product locomotive. We need entertainment locomotive that we can hook all these different products to, and that's how the meeting goes. It used to be called Synergy, but now we think of it as a locomotive and boxcars of rides, movies, books, animation, all of it together.
So the people are loving the Jurassic World.
Are they?
You know, this weekend, I finally decided to bite the bullet. I decided to make my trip to the movies to be all about, you know, an unstoppable dinosaur. I speak, of course, of Woody Allen, and I saw his new movie, but I also saw the Jurassic World. And
tell me about the unstoppable dinosaur that is Woody Allen.
The first half hour of this Jurassic World movie is so bad.
I heard.
I mean, it's nothing is believable. No one is believable.
Right.
If I told you to play a distracted workaholic, you would be playing the hell out of the distracted workaholic. In fact, you would give all your focus and concentration and effort into being a distracted workaholic, which feels nothing like a distracted workaholic who has 100 different things going on.
Yeah, right.
And it's not, again, I don't blame the actors. And in fact, once the action starts a half hour into it, suddenly many of these performances start to feel real because these actors, you can sense the relief on their part where they finally get to start embodying at least something energetically that feels real
to them. Around.
Instead of, okay, Dean, we have to hit these notes, these ideas, we only have this scene to get this across.
Here's your character stuff.
Yeah, here's your character notes. Now go play it.
Right.
And there's no rehearsal time, and there's no work being done rooting it in anything real, except for the two young boys who actually from the get-go get to be running nonstop and being, oh, two little boys.
Right, exactly.
When Vincent D'Onofrio is not believably finding anything interesting,
as he
doesn't do in his first long scene, he eventually gets there, but he doesn't in that first long scene when he fails to do it, because there's no actor as committed to finding something authentically interesting as him.
I know. You see that Kingpin stuff he's doing on...
so good. So good. As you know, I binge watched that series twice.
I did not know that.
Well, I told you.
Oh, yeah, but now I know.
Before you left.
Right.
Anyway.
Yeah, I forgot.
I guess it does deliver the goods, and clearly people love it. And I, you know, enjoyed it at times. I will say this, unlike some of the other Jurassic movies, what I did appreciate about it was it gave me the sense of when I was a kid watching the Godzilla movies. There was that sense of joy and fun.
Right. And destruction porn.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, is it didn't feel like destruction porn in the same way that Ultron did. Yeah. First of all, what they're destroying is and this is the nifty trick that Jurassic World does. It destroys a money-grubbing capitalist theme park.
Fantastic.
That's exploiting animals and people, while at the same time, the movie's making money hand over fist with product placement.
Yeah. It's ironic.
But they pull it off.
It's meta-fantastic.
You don't mind that you're seeing Starbucks every 45 seconds, because that sucker is going to get destroyed.
I love it.
And then you walk out going, I could really use a coffee beverage. It's the best of both possible worlds. Best of both possible Jurassic worlds. but the movie of the summer, and this is often the case, isn't it? In addition, I think, to Mad Max Fury Road, which granted is not for all tastes or all ages. Pixar's Inside Out, which is for all tastes and all ages. They absolutely nail it. It's hilarious. If you're not aware of the basic premise, it's about the core emotions within us that alternate running the ship, as it were, driving the car that is our lives. And so it's almost like a bridge set, a control set, a control room set, and the core emotions that are in charge of every being. A wonderful little bit at the end where we get to go inside the control room inside a cat. And that one is terrific. But like all the best Pixar movies, you know, it's got the humor, it's got the heart, and it has a nice larger message,
right,
that does not hit you over the head.
Well, and as Pixar, you know, I went to a screenwriting seminar where there was a Pixar writer, and the way they write is the way they used to write in Hollywood. It's a team of writers in the room, and they pass around the script, so it's not one guy just the lines and ideas. It's everybody working together collectively on the story, because the animation's so expensive and you're not going to go into drawing stuff digitally with all of these animators until you know exactly what you're drawing, until you have the script down, until the voices are recorded. A lot of people didn't know that these voiceover animations, the voices are recorded first, then you draw around the voices, so that it leaves room for the improv and all that sort of thing.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
So I could see that why Pixar has risen to the top, because of that very nature.
Well, and
animation
stays, and not only risen to the top, but staying there.
Right.
And continuing to do good work.
Because the culture that they built on how they create stuff is a communal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a fertile creative culture.
Absolutely.
That's really great. And explains why, isn't it Brad Bird who did Tomorrowland?
Yeah.
Who previously had done the excellent Mission Impossible movie that we both loved.
Yeah.
But maybe I'm going to say that the Tomorrowland circumstances didn't offer the same level of communal creativity that the Pixar.
I would say maybe that's true. That's all I'm saying.
Prior to that.
You got a green light.
That new Mission Impossible trailer is looking pretty
fun. Oh, I haven't seen it.
By the way. And you know what else? Great trailer. I mean, this trailer actually sent chills. Creed.
What?
The the reboot slash sequel of the Rocky franchise,
yeah,
focusing on Apollo Creed's son. And when you see the credit from the director of Fruitvale Station,
wow,
and you're seeing these shots of Philadelphia, and you go, wow, this guy, it really is a reboot in the true sense that they're revisiting the spirit of the original Rocky, which was not really a boxing movie.
No, it wasn't. The boxing was secondary to the rise up against your circumstances.
Your circumstances, yeah. And
the circumstances of being Philadelphia.
And the circumstances this time around of being, you know, inner city, urban, black poverty.
Right.
Anyway, very exciting. But I have been watching at least one movie a day.
Holy.
Since you've been gone, because one of the things that I've really availed myself of is Turner Classic Movies.
Oh, yes.
Has been doing their Summer of Darkness.
Oh.
And it's every Friday in June and July, 24 hours of film noirs.
Oh.
And I, of course, have always loved film noir.
Yes.
Stunned by how many I had never seen.
I got a Roku channel down in Australia that's all film noir classics. Just saw the St. Louis bank robbery, Steve McQueen's first film.
Whoa.
Take a look at that thing if you want to see gritty movie.
So like two from Edward Dimitrik. I knew Edward Dimitrik, the filmmaker, as one of the Hollywood Ten.
Right.
You know, he, the...
Blacklisting. He was the fingered as a communist.
At first he refused to name names, then he did, saying that he'd been used by the Communist Party. But it's interesting because this whole question, even before HUAC began its activities, clearly the communist suspicion,
right,
was rising in this country, and it's fueling his film noirs.
What was his movie called?
Well, the two that I saw of his, Cornered.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which starred Dick Powell.
Yeah.
Right, who had been a young romantic tenor lead,
right,
in so many soft musicals.
Series?
No, not William Powell.
Oh,
Dick Powell, who'd been your young lead, your juvenile lead.
Right.
And he really changed his persona and became kind of this hard-boiled character. He played Philip Marlowe in one of the big Philip Marlowe adaptation noirs.
Oh.
I can't stand Dick Powell. This is someone so hard, trying so hard to be what he's not.
Uh-huh.
And this is one of the things from watching a lot of these early movies. Like, I watched John Garfield in Postman Always Rings Twice.
Yeah, right?
I watched George Raft in a film noir called Nocturne.
Oh,
people
yeah.
forget now what a huge star George Raft was.
He was huge.
We wouldn't have Humphrey Bogart, really, if we didn't have George Raft turning down every role Humphrey Bogart would end up playing.
Basically, yeah. Humphrey Bogart was the second choice because George Raft wouldn't do it.
George Raft, terrible actor. Terrible. Just a non-actor. And I'm curious, is like, how can he be giving nothing to this dialogue in almost a proto Joe Friday kind of way? He's giving nothing, and then when he's done with the line that he's reciting as wrote, then he starts to act in between lines. And then he says another line as wrote. And then I find out two things. Maybe an answer to that question of why he's such a bad actor, and two, why he turned down so many great parts.
Uh-huh.
He remained illiterate his whole life.
What? You're kidding.
Scripts had to be read to him.
Are you kidding me?
No.
When did you find out this fact?
In researching Mr. Raft.
Wow.
I also found out that really the latter part of what would have been his acting career was spent as casino greeter around the world.
Is that right?
And that his excellent turn in Billy Wilder's Some Like It Hot led to no kind of comeback whatsoever.
Wow.
And probably because people realized, well, that's Billy Wilder. Billy Wilder cast him perfectly.
Right.
Billy Wilder used what he was.
Right.
And it worked so well. But anyway, so I'm kind of struck that, in these 40s, you're still getting actors who became big in the late 30s, early 40s, and screen acting wasn't what it would be by the late 40s and 50s.
I know. There was the whole method.
Not only the method, but people like Bogart.
Right.
Who had been trained on stage and who had to work a long time before they became stars.
Yeah, yeah.
But this John Garfield, who is the the prototype for the method.
Yeah.
Who, by the way, suffered a heart attack after testifying before HUAC refusing to name names and being blacklisted and there dying of a heart attack at 39 when his career was taken away from him, which is a terribly sad story. He was as big a star as Warner Brothers produced. If Postman Always Rings Twice is any indication, this guy was dreadful. Well, I'm throwing the greats under the bus.
Wow,
in
look
the
at
morning.
This. This is shocking.
But the other Edward Dmytryk film.
Yeah.
So this first one, Cornered, like Gilda, set in Argentina, in Buenos Aires.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of noirs. Very interested in Argentina.
South America.
Right? I guess because it was honeycomb with Nazi spies after the war. But the other one that I saw from Dmytryk, fascinating little movie, Crossfire, which starred Robert Young as a pipe-smoking, no-nonsense police detective.
Uh-huh.
Robert Mitchum as an army sergeant, helping Robert Young with his investigation.
Huh.
And the great Robert Ryan. No actor in noir better than Robert Ryan, playing an anti-Semitic former soldier.
Wow.
Who's guilty of murder. And so the movie deals with anti-Semitism based on a novel by Richard Brooks, who, of course, would himself become a filmmaker of both film noirs and westerns, make the classic The Professionals that I love.
Right.
But it was based on his novel, which didn't deal with anti-Semitism. I forget whether it was, I think it was hatred of homosexuality, persecution of homosexuality, but they couldn't do that under the code, so they made it about anti-Semitism, and that change works very well in the movie. But it's fascinating because Crossfire, even with that cast, was a B picture, like most film noirs, and it was the first B picture to be nominated for Best Picture.
Oh, well, you're kidding.
No.
How about that? It's called Crossfire.
Crossfire, and it's an interesting little movie.
I'm going to watch that.
Two others that I saw, because I got into these movies photographed by John Alton, who was a wonderful cinematographer with, especially in film noir.
Yeah.
So much of what we think of as film noir, he's responsible for, if not innovating, then certainly taking to its highest impact.
Yeah, for sure.
First I saw Mystery Street, directed by John Sturges, who again would later go on to great success in westerns and big budget action films like Great Escape, Magnificent Seven.
Absolutely.
And I saw Border Incident, directed by Anthony Mann. And here's how much I'm learning I didn't know about film noir. I always thought of Anthony Mann as a director of westerns, and he made great westerns like Winchester 73 and Man from Laramie.
Yeah.
Then I find out, only through The Summer of Darkness, he's considered maybe the preeminent director of film noir.
What?
And I'd never seen any of them.
Oh, my gosh.
The connection, in addition to John Alton, between these two films, they both starred Ricardo Montalban.
Yes, he was fantastic.
Who was a huge star in Mexico, comes to America, and all he pretty much gets to play is Latin lover villains in these kind of lighthearted movies.
Right.
What you love about his work, as opposed to, for example, Dick Powell in Cornered, or John Garfield in Postman Always Rings Twice, Ricardo Montalban gets a chance to do something different, play the lead in these serious, gritty movies, and he doesn't give it too much. He's played characters who are doing their job.
Right.
And not only are they doing their job, it's a job they do day in, day out,
right,
every day.
And you get that feeling.
There's nothing special about it.
He's just running that out.
It's you know, it's what decades later we would find so remarkable about Richard Jenkins' work when he finally gets to play a lead role in The Visitor.
Yeah.
It's how did that guy restrain himself to give so little?
Yeah.
Because the impulse has to be, I've been a supporting actor, I've been a character actor, I've been typecast in these Latin lover roles or whatever the thing is, I've been so frustrated, I want to show what I can do, and then when you get your chance, I'm going to show it.
Yeah, exactly. Then you pour on the juice.
Yeah.
And then it just looks like shit.
Well, everything becomes weighed down then. You see somebody pushing against their limitations, pushing against their frustrations. That's what I see when I see, for example, Dick Powell in these film noirs.
Yeah.
But Montalban, you understand why, okay, maybe it would take 30 years, but why major international stardom was certainly on the card for this guy because he's a consummate professional.
Yeah, it sure was.
And it's just so much fun to watch.
Ah, oh, now I'm jealous. So there's no Turner Movie Classic down under.
Really?
No. And I can't get it on any Roku box, so I'm digging in and finding film noir channels. And, you know, there's 30,000 Roku channels.
But the internet now down there, what is this like? Tell me about the...
The internet's changing, actually, because it was... They would charge you per data throughput, and it was ridiculous. But now there's some high-speed options that are unlimited, so you just surf all you want, and nobody makes you pay. Because it used to be that, oh, you know, watch one streaming movie and you're screwed. Also, Netflix just introduced last March down there. Everybody was excited about that because apparently everybody does VPN tunnels to American Roku boxes or American things to watch all their movies, kind of like a bootleggy situation there. It's kind of bizarre that everybody does that.
Well, that's good news. So that seems like then if we do this show, and now it's time for a production meeting on the air.
Right, let's do that.
If we do this show where you record your end of the conversation.
Yeah.
And just email it to me, that's not going to be prohibitively expensive.
I don't think so. No, that's going to be...
And you can do it uncompressed and just send it to
the whole thing. The thing that's going to be prohibitively expensive is the electricity, for crying out loud. 82 days of electricity use, $500. Can you believe that?
Wow.
I know, because it's all coal burning down there. Most polluted bloody town I ever smelt is Sydney. There's no emission controls on any of the cars.
I think that's a lot of money, and I would hazard a guess that there's people in this country whose fuel and energy costs are
same
that much during cold weather, you know, I don't know. We're
I don't know.
Here in L.A., you know, you usually don't need air conditioning. You usually don't need a heater. So yeah.
Well, and that's the thing. All the houses, our place has no insulation. And it looks like it's built on an Indian burial ground for how freaking cold it is.
So before I drop you off.
Oh, yes.
Let's talk a little bit of binge watching.
Yes.
So you've been catching up on season 2 of Silicon Valley?
Silicon Valley. Fully immersed in that one.
Season 2 is so good. Just,
yes.
Terrific.
And I'm in now episode 4. Of first season Mad Men.
Oh, nice. Yes. Very, very good.
So that's going to be a long one.
Okay. This season of Veep was, I felt too short. I wish that there had been a couple more episodes. It's not just a case of leaving us wanting more, but also I just felt like they didn't pay off a couple of things the way they might have if they had a couple more episodes. Uh-huh. But that's a minor complaint. The truth is, this is like watching an all-star team of comedy players at the height of their game.
Ah, fantastic.
And not just, you know, old standbys that I've always loved on the show, like Matt Walsh and Gary Cole, but recent additions to the cast, like I mentioned
Hugh Laurie.
How about Diedrich Bader?
Oh.
And this wonderful young actor, hopefully I can read his name without hitting a car, Sam Richardson.
Oh.
Sam Richardson is hilarious in this thing. So anyway, I can't recommend it enough.
Okay, I'm going to watch it. That was on the plane,
it just gets better and better and better.
I'll watch it on the way back.
So I said when you left that I was going to start binge-watching Hannibal.
Uh-huh.
I blissfully was going to get to ignore Aquarius, David Duchovny's show.
You're right.
So what do? I binge watch immediately Aquarius.
I haven't seen Hannibal.
And then Hannibal gets canceled.
Your fault.
So I will, I guess, watch Hannibal, except that I don't feel like there's been any sort of resolution. There'd been hope that this was going to get picked up again, but Amazon passed, Netflix passed, and the actors for Hannibal have all been released from their contracts, including Gillian Anderson. And it's so amazing because this is a beloved show with great reviews. Aquarius, not huge numbers.
Right.
And bad reviews.
Rightly so.
But here's the thing. It's oddly fun.
Uh-huh.
And oddly effective, but never at the same time.
Oh.
The show that they set out to make is effective at times.
Right.
But there's a show that they didn't set out to make that's fun.
That's
and,
getting
away from them. And so it's this interesting thing because the fun comes really courtesy of David Duchovny.
Right.
who's also the reason that the show they set out to make doesn't work.
Right.
Because he's not correctly cast.
Ah.
I mean, I'll do a loop. I'll do one little loop here
well, then,
so
yeah,
we can...
go up to left, come up eighth, and come downhill.
Okay.
For those playing along.
So, you know, because he's not this... You don't believe him as the character they wrote.
Right.
This ultra-conservative, by-the-book kind of guy. You know, his sense of humor is just so quirky.
Yes.
As an actor.
As always.
And absurd.
Absolutely.
And absurd. And those are the funniest moments and the fun moments. So it's this really odd contrast between the show they set out to make that they do at times.
Uh-huh.
Some of the other actors' work is tremendous in this period piece. But David Duchovny, who's so modern as an actor, belies that period piece. The other big weakness is, boy, the casting of Charles Manson's terrible.
Oh, no.
Just terrible. Instead of a charismatic cult leader, we get a pretty boy.
What?
Which is not what...
Yeah.
An uninteresting pretty boy.
Wow.
So anyway, but it's coming back for a season two, and I've not started to watch Hannibal, and you know, it's hard for me to commit to these things. I did finally watch Deadwood, even though I knew that one was not going to give me a satisfactory conclusion.
Oh, I know.
True Detective 2
yeah.
has started to air. Everything that we feared is absolutely true about
knew
this.
I knew it.
I will say that Colin Farrell's doing excellent work.
Oh, good.
And he's disappeared inside a character.
Fantastic.
Other actors are trying really hard. Rachel McAdams, Vince Vaughn. They, of course, both in their own way need this.
Yeah.
And they are trying hard. They are, you know, working hard at this. But, boy, like we said, you know, that first season, you had great actors on location.
Yeah.
With one director who was doing every... Show.
Yeah.
And where should I turn?
Go all the way up to Hill.
Okay. And so they were working with the director and the writer
yeah.
on location, fighting it out, really coming up with something. Here, you have different directors every episode, so they're not going to have the weight to do it. You have actors who now need this show.
Right.
As opposed to McConaughey and Woody Harrelson, who didn't. They just needed it to be good.
Right.
If they were going to do it, they needed it to be good. And you're shooting in L.A. Everyone's at home. You're not on location. So again, it's like what you described with Pixar. That whole environment, that fertile creative environment isn't there
right.
That allows for that collaboration.
And that's such a big deal.
And you feel it missing.
Yeah,
you really do. Finally, I just wanted to say this. I'd never, ever watched... I watched Star Trek Enterprise, or Enterprise as it was known.
Right.
I watched it, especially when our friend Tucker Smallwood joined the cast. I watched his whole season of it.
Yeah.
And it was a very good season.
Yeah.
But it ended in the most ridiculous time travel related... cliffhanger.
Yeah.
I'd ever seen. So I, like everyone, stopped watching at that point. The final season of Enterprise drew less than 3 million viewers a week after, you know, premiering to 13 million viewers when it first aired. But I'd always heard that final season was actually good.
Oh.
And I saw Tucker perform at the Breakfast Club, and there were photos of him from Enterprise, and I realized, you know, I never did watch that final season, and of course our friend Linda Park was in it. Maybe I should give it a try. I binge watched that final season. It is not only some really good shows, it actually is great Star Trek.
What?
So much so that everything in the first episodes where I find it to be weaknesses, like, well, these Vulcans are not acting like Vulcans at all.
Right.
It turns the weaknesses into strengths. And so many episodes serve as these wonderful prequels to great episodes that will come, but not in a way that is like capitalizing on them. Rather, it's on a way that deepens your enjoyment of what will come. So fourth season of Enterprise for us, this old Star Trek fan, really, really fun.
How about that? And here we are at my house.
At the Eastern Columbia building, your once and future home. All right, Dean Hagland, have
Thanks
a safe
right.
trip to Connecticut.
Thank you.
Maybe we'll check in
on the other side.
Yeah, maybe we'll check in this weekend, or when you get back into town, we'll do a phone call, and that'll be part of a future show.
I love it.
Oh, all right.
I love it. See you later.
Belated spoiler alert.